All right, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Strength Academy Podcast. Grayson here, joined by Mundo.
What's up, y'all?
So we're going to do a quick little recap. We just got done with coming back from Santa Fe yesterday. Did a little local meet up there at the 5th anniversary Miller Weightlifting. And yeah, we brought a team of 10 people up to that meet. It was the first local meet that we've done up in Santa Fe that required three sessions throughout the day. Because we had, was it 35 women?
34 women.
34 women and 22 men. Mm-hmm. So it was a pretty long day. How are you feeling? You recovered from that yet?
Well, a lot of standing, a lot of walking around back and forth. I mean, it really was a lot of, not physical work, but like mentally it was exhausting.
Yeah, meets are always like that.
So as far as like my body goes, I'm still a little bit sore from training, but I think I recovered well. I slept like 9 hours last night. I went to bed like at 10:30.
Yeah.
Woke up at like 9 this morning. So I feel okay. A little bit more recharged than I was for sure at the end of yesterday.
Yeah, by the end of the day yesterday, I was just tired and sweaty and had a headache from... I counted it up afterwards and I had had a coffee energy drink from Starbucks. 3 16-ounce cups of coffee from like VM Roasters, which is a local place here, a can of cold brew, and like 2 Monsters over the course of the day.
That's a lot.
It was a poor decision. By 10 o'clock at night, my head was throbbing, and I was just so uncomfortable. But I'm feeling a little bit better now.
Okay.
But yeah, sometimes those all-day events... you know, six plus hours of competition in a day takes it out of you for sure.
Well, plus you trained like 4 days straight to try to, cause you didn't want to train after the meet on Saturday. And so I know you kind of like condensed your training a little bit. So you went into Saturday kind of a little bit sore to begin with.
Yeah. So hopefully, if I get enough food in today and get some extra sleep tonight, we'll be all right. But our lifters all did, very, very well. So we had, 2 girls in the first session. They were both, well, I guess your daughter's technically a junior now. But
yeah, she's 17, but she turns 18 this year, so technically she's a junior.
But she did really well. I think you said that we opened her at her finishing lifts from her prior competition in January.
Yeah, exactly.
And she made some good advances on that and hit some better depth on her snatches.
Yeah. I think they were more technically precise lifts. And then, yeah, added kilos. And what we ended up doing was we started off, pretty much like right where she left off last meet, and then added a couple more kilos onto the total. And she's a beginner. She's like 6 months into weightlifting. Like she had never really played any sports or done anything like hyper like focused like weightlifting prior to this, so I'm impressed with her progress, and I think she's, you know, she's got some potential if she can stick with it. You know how teenagers are, though.
Yeah, but once you get hooked, you know, 2 competitions in, you know, 6 months is a pretty good start.
Yeah.
Also in that session, we had our new lifter, Sophia.
Mm-hmm.
She had a pretty good day, was very close to qualifying for AO2, so we'll get her back out there, but for a first meet, went out there and really moved well. She's got a lot of potential as well. So that was kind of our first session there, is our kind of younger athletes kind of developing, getting out, getting some competition experience. And we had another first-time lifter in the second women's session. Amanda finally was able to do her first meet.
Right.
And Kayla both both had very, very good competitions. Let's see.
And, Sway, this was kind of like a tune-up meet for her.
Yep.
She didn't hit maximal lifts, but she hit close to, I would say, like sub 90%.
Right around 90 on the third.
And, you know, she looked really good. Her lifts were nice and snappy, no hesitation. So couldn't ask for a better meet. She went 6 for 6.
Closed out the meet, heaviest lifts of the day.
Yeah.
It was really, it was a good performance for them. I was really happy to see the improvements that Kayla made in her consistency and competition, because she's always been, you know, pretty good at pulling under the bar in training, but had a tendency to power in some of the prior competitions, and she made good.
She's come a long way, yeah.
Full lifts and solid improvements on the jerk this go around. So excited to kind of get her back out there and see if we can get closer to that total. Amanda debuted the squat jerk on the platform. She's one of the few people on the team that power jerks. She has an old knee injury that kind of makes the split stance a little bit uncomfortable. So we've been doing, really working on power and squatting under the bar for the jerk.
Yeah.
And I think it's really starting to pay off. It's getting a lot more consistent. Yeah, and I love seeing a squat jerk appear at a local meet, because everybody in the crowd's just like, what happened? I did not see that coming. So it was really cool to see her get out there. Her fiance Tyler, she's usually running the support role for him, and he was doing the opposite for her. So it was kind of cool to get to see them change roles on meet day.
Yeah, that was good. Alex for the guys, he was one of the newer lifters that we have, and this was his first competition, and he has kind of been a little bit like unsure about where he wants to go with weightlifting, but I think he put up some pretty decent numbers, and his improvement overall in the past couple months has been, as long as he's been consistent, like he's shown improvement. And I think that, you know, if he wants to kind of get into that mentality of like, I want to continue to focus on this sport, like I think he has a lot of potential.
I think it'll be a lot of fun getting him and the other youths together over the summer and really getting to kind of train a little bit more without having to worry about the stresses of homework or other classes or other kind of extracurriculars. Yeah. It'll be really good for all of our youth team to kind of get some more consistent training in. It's starting to get nice outside, so we can start doing some loaded carries and some short sprints and that sort of stuff. It's going to be a really good summer of training for those guys. And yeah, he went 6 for 6. Made all of his lifts and actually got progressively better as the weight went up. Because as he got more kind of used to the nerves of being on the platform, that really kind of started to come together. Next up in the men's session, our lifter, Jay, he, also his first meet, had a really solid day. His biggest limiter is like extending the arms all the way is a hard time with lockout because he's extremely well muscled.
Yeah.
But he made a solid 99 kilo snatch. After missing it on his second attempt, really made a solid, stuck the landing on the third, and ended with a 117 clean and jerk. After really kind of focusing in and dialing that elbow lockout.
Yeah.
And I think it was a really good first competition. Made the total for AO2.
Right.
So he'll be lifting as an 81 out there. And excited to kind of keep things moving in that direction for him. He's gotten a lot better over the last couple months. And if we can really start dialing things in over the next 14 weeks till AO2, it's going to be a blast.
Oh, yeah. He's another one that's like been in the gym consistently working on specifically weightlifting technique. And he's shown a lot of improvement as well. And he's got a lot of, like, strength potential.
Yeah, I mean, he squats 500. So I think every little bit of technical improvement we can get, we're going to get to see some exciting numbers out of him.
Yeah, for sure. And then next, we had Alan. And Alan was, Alan, Mike, and Chris. So, like, let's talk about them collectively.
Yeah, so this was an interesting scenario.
Collectively, like, those three all, for some reason, ended up in the 102 category this weekend. And so the New Mexico state records were currently held by Mike. And Mike, Chris, and Alan were all in the 102, and they were all going to open at relatively the same weights.
They all opened at 100 kilos
For the snatch. And then, Grayson and I kind of had to, so we didn't want to play for favorites with any of them.
Yeah, because it's hard. Because you usually are trying to position your people if there's another guy in their weight category or, you know, someone who's going to be buying for who's going to snatch the most of this meet. But it ended up that at the end of the meet, the last nine attempts essentially were all our club. So it kind of put us in this situation where, well, I'm not going to, you know, try to make Alan beat Chris or make Mike beat Alan. Like, so what we told them was we laid out some ground. We just said, everybody makes their opener and your changes are up to you guys. And it was really fun to see them kind of battle it out. And I think they moved the snatch record up 8 kilos at that meet.
Yeah.
It was at 104, I think.
Right.
Mike moved it, or Alan moved it up to 105, Mike moved it up to 111, and then Chris moved it up to 112 in the end.
Right, yeah, and he finished that session out with the 112 snatch for the 102s. And it's funny because I like having those guys push each other.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I think it really does wonders for them. And I think that's why environment and having teammates is important. And I think we're going to talk a little bit about, I know weightlifting is an individual sport, but in this case, like having teammates that were right there with you, pushing you, and like iron sharpens iron. You know, you're going to be better because everybody's trying to get better, and the rising tide lifts all boats. So like the whole end of that session was really awesome to watch because those guys were just pushing each other and they were going for it.
Yeah, so on the clean and jerk, we kind of applied the same things. Mike got to an attempt to PR. He pressed it out a little bit, but it was very close on a 135 snatch. Mm-hmm. Alan and Chris Chris started things off at 135. Alan made his 140. And then Chris moved up to 145 and took an attempt at 150. But it was a really good day for them, I think, to be able to kind of take a little bit of charge of it, where like being able to pick their own weights and what they wanted to do versus always having us dictate. Because I, like we always talk about, like we look for, you know, our lifters to, like, as they get better and better, kind of be like, no, okay, no, I want this number. I know I can take a 6 kilo jump here. I want to do it. And that was kind of a perfect way to practice it, because it sort of was kind of the way that they lift in practice when they're all going heavy is, oh, what did you hit? I'm going to try to do one more kilo than you. And, so that does kind of tie us into what we were thinking about talking about, which is that individual sport, but team training, where I think it's really important to have people that are kind of lifting around the same weights as you, or like people that you're kind of close to that you can try to keep up with. And it's not for everybody. I think some people don't really thrive off that sort of competition.
Right.
But I think that some people will be like, you know, it's like, oh, you hit a 1 kilo PR on your snatch, I'm going to hit a 2 kilo to beat you for the day. And I think that really motivates particularly guys that age, you know, mid-20s, like... Those guys get pretty motivated by that sort of thing. But at the end of the day, only one person gets the record. So it was really interesting that even though they were directly competing against each other and they were all genuinely trying to beat each other.
Right.
It was still really like there was a lot of camaraderie, even like they were supporting each other even when it meant that was going to beat what you just did. And that was really cool to see.
Yeah. Yeah. And I appreciated that. So in our gym, there's not really anybody that's close to me, in numbers. In weight class, there is. Riley's, he's at 73, but he's a national level lifter, and he's competed at AO finals and university nationals and stuff like that. So he has a higher, much higher qualifying total than I do. And so like, it's kind of hard to like, who am I chasing? And it ends up being that, like, the one that I'm closest to is Dee. And Dee's a national level lifter. And she's an 87 kilo female lifter. And her numbers are kind of close to mine. So it's like I'm trying to keep up with her. And
what I love is that that you getting closer gets her pushing too.
It pushes her too, yeah. Yeah, because, like, I know she kind of doesn't want me to catch up to her. And I'm trying to, so yeah, that one works out in that way. So like, I think that environment is important. And so outside of the team, I really don't care what anybody else does. Like, somebody, I used to have the New Mexico State records and now I don't. I really doesn't matter. Like I get, sometimes I'll get a, you know, an email with the new state records on there and I'll check them and, you know, they haven't changed or anything and that's fine. But like for these guys, I like the team environment. I like the fact that they push each other. I like the fact that they're close enough to where they can challenge each other, but it's not like overly aggressive. You know how things outside team, because in weightlifting, I'm not going to say things are tribal because we're not that big of a community, but I think that
there's a little bit
of tribalism that goes along with it. Like I want our lifters to be the best, but it's not because I want to beat somebody else. I just want them to reach their potential. And if it just happens that we beat other people in the process, that's fine.
Yep. I think that's a good way to look at it. Cause if you get too worried about what another club's doing, or, you know, as a coach, like you get too worried about what are other coaches doing, like you don't want to get in a system where you're trying to like copy what somebody else is right. doing. You yeah. know, you want to be doing your own thing and learning things for yourself. But I was really happy with how that turned out, and I think that those guys training together every weekend and they you know, I think it's been a big help for all of their lifting in general, having that kind of environment. But it's just very funny to watch, you know, teammates compete against each other as individuals,
right?
And having as a coach to just say, well, I'm not really going to give anybody what I think you should do right now,
right?
Because I don't want to play favorites. So it was kind of fun to take a step back because we essentially just got to sit there and watch the whole thing,
right?
which was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and we didn't have to do like any reining in either, because like we weren't trying to hold any specific lifter back or push them in either direction. So it's just like we kind of got to take just a slight back seat and just see what these guys would go for, because we know what they're capable of and we know what they're consistently able to hit. And to see them kind of choose and pick their own numbers was really just interesting from my perspective, just to see like what their ideas of strategy were in that situation. So I thought that was fascinating. And then just watching them like go for it, just go and lift it. And I had fun. I still had fun with it.
Yeah, it was a great time. Yeah, we got to spend a lot of time with our athletes and everybody stuck around and watched. It was, I always like that, you know, whenever we bring a crew up, most of the time they stay till the end, even if they're done lifting.
Yeah.
I really like that. You know, they stick around and support the other lifters. Yeah, it was definitely a good meet. So I know that might've been a little bit weird if you weren't there. But yeah, you might stumble across that in your own thing where you're having to compete head to head with a teammate for something, and just remembering that you can be competitive with each other without being mean to each other, and you can use that to kind of push yourself towards some higher goals.
I think that ties in a tiny bit with, like, right now we have Pan Ams coming up, and I know that collectively, all these people that make up the Pan Ams team come from different weightlifting clubs. There's not a whole lot of like crossover between, you know, who comes from which club.
It's maybe one or two. Yeah, it's tops.
Usually just maybe one person from one club, and they might not even come from a big club. They might come from a club with just maybe a stable of 10 lifters, but these are the people that are vying for these spots. And a lot of the time, they're vying for spots within their own team against other people in the same weight class and categories. And I think that there's some healthy competition as far as like Americans trying to vie for those spots. But let's remember that at the end of the day, these are all people that are just part of our team. Like,
yeah, for the USA
for
the US. Team.
Yeah, for the USA team, and we should support them. Because like, I know a lot of the times people are like, oh, Catherine Nye and Maddie Rogers are in the same category.
I mean, that is going to be exciting.
It is going to be a good. It's going to be good. And I don't know who to root for because I like both of them and I think they're both phenomenal lifters. And, you know, I just hope that they push each other in a good way to produce the best results for themselves and for the team.
Yeah, I think that especially at that level, like having that little bit of competition is probably helpful for them to, you know, make sure like. I think that if you have like that little bit of rivalry or that little bit of competition, it makes it a lot easier to eat that meal when you don't want to, or go to bed an hour earlier. It's like, well, oh no, but they might be going to bed an hour earlier. I got to do
it.
You know? So I think that that sort of stuff can help, you know, bring everybody up. And kind of back to the local meet thing. One of the things that I am so impressed with now is the first local meet I ever went to. I think there were only three snatches done above 100 kilos, and it was one guy who followed himself and snatched like 125.
Right.
At, you know, in the women's sessions, like almost nobody was getting above 50 kilos. And it's been really cool to see over the years the quality of the lifting just continue improving and the size of the meets continuing to grow.
Yeah.
And it just shows that weightlifting, you know, there's new clubs popping up. Still, you know, yeah. And I think that it's really taking hold in our city in particular. Yeah. Like there's a lot more weightlifting around.
Oh, that's one thing that I did want to ask you about is like, so there are a lot of new clubs popping up. So a lot of like these functional fitness gyms and these other types of gyms are starting to, you know, get their own weightlifting clubs started. And do you think more is better? Or do you think that maybe, I'm not saying that a monopoly should exist in like who, you know, has the bulk of the weightlifting community on their teams and things like that. But sometimes you see other clubs and you watch their lifters and it's just like, oh man, these people are really getting a bad deal from their coaches because they're not teaching them in a very good way. Or like you can tell, you can absolutely tell who doesn't have any experience in doing this at all.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with being new. I'm not saying that, you know, everybody starts somewhere. The problem is that like a lot of these people will start clubs. They have zero clue what they're doing and they're not asking anybody for help. They're not even, they already think that they know how everything works. And you can tell in the arrogance of how they warm up their lifters and the attempts and the jumps that they make all the way down to their technique. And it's like, do you think more is better in cases like this? Or like, how do you feel about the number of like clubs that are popping up?
Well, I think that it is all in all a good thing. Like, I think that getting more people involved in the sport means that more, you know, parents are lifting, so kids will get into it.
Right.
And, you know, you can find some of that more, just the more people that participate, the more talent there like arises. And, like it is like easy to kind of look at, you know, like people who are just starting out, maybe it's their first meet and it's their first few months as coaches. And you see them doing things that you're like, ooh, I know that's a mistake, or, I know where this person's opening and they shouldn't be warming up right now.
Yeah. Or not being cognizant of qualifying totals.
And yeah.
Not allowing their lifters to take the lifts that are going to get them qualified for higher level meets.
And I think that, while it's tempting to be like tempting to kind of go say something,
yeah,
or, you know, think like, oh, well, like this shouldn't be going on. I know that was my first few meets as a coach too, though. Was, you know, when I first started bringing people around, we all just had CrossFit technique, you know, like we had smash the bar with your hips and hope it goes to the right spot, and if you power, whatever. And it just took, you know, time going through like, oh, okay. But I think that, you know, what you want to look for is, it's okay to be on the team with a new coach, but if they're like, I'm always, especially at national meets now, but especially when I started out at local meets, I was just watching what everybody did.
Yeah.
I was like, how are Shane and Jody running, like, timing their warm-ups. Because when I first went to a meet, I didn't know how to time warm-ups. So I'd just try to lift whatever the weight on the bar was on the platform. I'd try to lift my warm-up that was around that weight, not taking into account that there might be 11 attempts at that weight.
Right.
You know, and I think that as long as, you know, it matters that you're, like, trying to learn and that you're trying to see, okay, like, so I like to see those newer coaches and those newer clubs, like, if they're kind of watching what some of the longer established clubs are doing and kind of trying to be like, oh, okay, so this is how they're timing their warm-ups. This is how they are organizing their cards. I remember at, I think it was American Open Finals, not Anaheim, but maybe Orlando. We were in the back, and Greg Everett had a lifter in that session. And I was warming our lifter up, but just trying to pay attention to how he was, you know, doing things and keeping track of stuff.
Right.
And I noticed that he was writing down, so like he got his count,
mm-hmm.
but I was always running back and forth to double check the count. And I noticed that he got his count, wrote it down on a piece of paper, and every time he heard a drop, whatever he was doing, he just crossed it off and wrote the new number down, and then would check in with it occasionally, right. Or have somebody check in. But he wasn't constantly running back and forth. I was like, that's a brilliant.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So now I do that all the time.
Right.
And that's a really, really good, like, I'll write it on my coffee cup or on whatever. Right. But I think that, you know, so when you're just starting out, like, you just kind of want to, like, look around and see who's doing what and, like, what the best way to do things is. And what I really like to see, though, is when you have a new club open up and the first meet's kind of weird, and then they're more dialed in 6 months later, and then a few months later, they're getting better and better.
Yeah.
I think that it does, I think it's beneficial, and it's always tempting to be like, ooh, I know I could do X, Y, and Z, like, this person has more potential than that, but I think, you know, it's easy to, like, forget what it was like to be that person on that day.
Yeah.
Where you're like, oh, I... Okay.
Yeah.
But I think as long as, you know, the people who are just starting out, it's that, you know, what do you call it, growth mindset?
A growth mindset, yeah.
You know, where it's not, oh, we're already good at this and we're just going to keep doing what we're doing. But right. If you're just always, like, striving and trying to improve those sort of things, because I think that as long as... Because every meet's a learning experience, you know. I've mistimed warm-ups
for
people. I've, you know, botched a count or declared the wrong weight. Or most memorably, I remember one of our first national meets with Dee. It might have been American Open Series 1, where she took third, I think. And we had two clean and jerks... or one clean and jerk left, but there was no lifter after us. And instead of declaring the automatic increase, running the clock, putting it up a kilo, running a clock, putting it up a kilo, I got excited and put the third attempt weight down without thinking.
Oh, yeah.
And then we had to do the third attempt on a 2 minute versus being able to buy some extra time. Right. And I felt guilty about that for months.
Oh,
like, because I knew, I was just like, as soon as I wrote it down, I was just, oh, I botched that. So we're going to have to take this right now.
Yeah.
We can't play any more games. And that was just, I got excited and wrote the wrong number down. So I think that, you know, as long as you're reflecting on how your athletes did and what their performance was like. But I will say one of the most common errors I do see at local competitions is improperly timing warm-ups.
Yeah.
Like, I see a lot of people go too soon. So, you know, people snatching 50% before introductions, you know, just doing way too much.
Right.
And we know that usually when we're at meets, we have to rein people back, especially if they're new.
Right.
It's no, you're too far ahead. You're too far ahead. You have to wait 5 more attempts before we do anything else. Because it feels too slow when you're in the back.
Right.
But, you know, when you're 40 lifts out, that means that you have 40 minutes before you have to hit your lift. And how long does it take you to warm up to your max snatch? It doesn't take you 40 minutes.
Right.
At least it shouldn't.
No.
So I think that, you know, the biggest thing is properly timing your warm-ups to where, you know 21 lifts out, you do your last set with the bar. Then 18 lifts out, you do 50%, 60% at 15, 70 at 12, and kind of build yourself up that way. Because, we see it a lot. It's too much too soon. And then, other things that I think, like, newer people starting out, like making consistent jumps between lifts. So not doing a 3 kilo jump followed by a 5 kilo jump.
Right.
You know, those are some of the like early on mistakes that I definitely made, but as a result of that can notice is if you see a declaration, you're like, whoa, that's a big weird. Jump.
Yeah. Why'd they do that?
And I don't know. Do you think some of that has to do with people train in pounds and then don't really, and they're trying to make a certain number in pounds. So they pick whatever the kilo equivalent is.
Yeah. I think that's exactly what it stems from is just like, oh, well, I know that like a lot of the people who don't train specifically Olympic weightlifting, they'll have pound plates and they're used to making jumps in pounds.
So if they're saying I'm going to make a 10-pound jump because that's what I usually do, it's like, well, yeah, but with weightlifting there are lots of numbers in between 60 and 65,
right,
or 60 and 66. So to say, oh, I'm gonna go from 135 to 145 is, I mean, it's funny because you can tell when people are not thinking in kilograms. Like if you get somebody that drops in from a gym that has pound plates, they're trying to do the math,
right,
you know, they're trying to figure it out. And they're like, okay, so this is 185. So then I'd go to 200. And it's like, well, in kilos, why wouldn't you just go 80 kilos, 90 kilos?
Yeah,
like, exactly. Don't worry about what it is in pounds. I think it's really weird that the unit of measurement can dictate what you think is a rational choice to make.
That's true. Yeah.
It's really bizarre. It's kind of the framework that you're viewing it through. So, like, if you're just used to thinking in pounds all the time, you're going to be trying to do... You're doing twice as much work as you need to.
Right.
And especially if you've done a meet before, even if you train in pound plates, get enough fractional plates that you can make it at least even to what it would be in a kilo. Or when you get to competition, don't worry about what it is in pounds. Just worry about doing 3 more kilos than your last meet.
Yeah.
You know, it's really... And it's hard because usually, like, if you look at squat programs like Texas Method,
mm-hmm,
where it says, okay, you're going to put a little weight on your squat once a week and then do a 5x5 based on it. The way it's written is it says go up 5 pounds a week. But there isn't an even equivalent of that for kilos. So do you go up 2 kilos a week or 3 kilos a week? Stop thinking about it in pounds, and then you can just pick one of those two and not worry about it. You still went up over last week.
That's true.
Because, yeah, I don't think about pounds at all anymore.
I don't think about pounds at all either.
I only do if it's like a milestone squat weight,
right,
or something.
I'll do a conversion. So like, and I'm probably going to stop posting like lifting videos because when I do it, I just seem to lose followers anyway. So like, when I post lifting videos, I'll put the kilos and then I'll convert it to pounds for people that, you know, don't follow in kilos. But I stopped thinking in pounds a long time ago. Like I don't check my weight in pounds. I don't lift in pounds. And I, you know, whenever I ask somebody like what their maxes are, if they tell me in pounds, I'm just like, oh, all right, well, now I got to go get a calculator and figure this out. Or unless it's like a number that I'm familiar with and I know exactly what it converts to. But like, I really have stopped thinking in pounds as a unit of measurement. Like,
yeah, it's
just doesn't, I don't think about it anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the same way. Like, I don't, I only weigh myself in kilos. I only think about, oh, it's 80, 90, that's fine. And then the only time I'm thinking pounds is Tyler going to squat 503 today? Yeah. You know, like that's the only time that I'm really thinking about it. And even then, that's just because, like, it sounds cooler to say I squatted 503.
That's true. Yeah.
But yeah, it's kind of funny. So you can kind of see that coming up. What other things do you think, like, other mistakes you see or you made as, like, a coach early on? Because especially since your first few meets, you had to coach yourself.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't helping you out in the back yet. So what did you do wrong in your first meet?
I think some of the mistakes that I made and that I've watched other people make too. Well, first, as an athlete, I'll say putting your equipment on too early. So, like, a lot of people, they'll be maybe 3 or 4 warm-ups in and they start putting their belt on. They might be halfway, you know, before they're even starting to think about warming up for platform lifts, and they'll have knee wraps on and things like that. So, like, they're not, these things are, I think, for maximal lift purposes, and people start relying on them way too early, especially in competitions. It's like, you shouldn't be trying to get used to your equipment, like, 3 or 4 lifts in, like, into your warm-up. So, like, a lot of people, like, and I used to do it, like, I would just be geared up. Like, have my belt on, I'd have my wraps on, my wrist wraps, you know, and then it's just like I had my reliance on the equipment way too early into the session. And so, like, when it came to do the maximal lifts on the platform, I didn't feel like I had any additional support, really. I was just lifting with, you know, my equipment. So instead of having the belt as a last resort, like that last piece of equipment to brace against, it was actually like a crutch that was just helping me get to the maximal lifts. So I don't know. I think a lot of people make that mistake. For warm-ups and attempts, like, I had a hard time knowing where I should be in the session. So, like, if I was going to start, you know, let's say 70 was my first snatch, then I didn't really know how to warm up to it. Like, I would just take the jumps in pounds, like, I thought would be okay. And I was one of those people that would, you know, try to time it according to other people, how they timed it. So, like, I didn't just make my own jumps. I was just like, oh, well, I'm kind of lifting the same as that person. I'm just going to follow along where they're at.
Yeah.
And so I learned that way. And so, like, I would pick somebody, even if they were in a different weight class than me, if they were lifting close to the same weight, I would just watch to see what kind of jumps they were taking and try to mimic close to what they were doing. And I did it that way.
And that can work out a little bit.
It worked out. Like, I mean, I got close to what I needed to do. And while I wasn't conditioned to take the jumps the same way, like, it was close enough to where it was, like, I could tell that I was on the right track. And then I think some of the mistakes that I've made as a coach is just the hardest part, I think, that I've had to take a lot of hard lessons from is trusting that the athletes are going to perform the same way on a competition day as they do in training. And especially when they go to, like, other meets that they have to travel to, and they're cutting weight, they just traveled, they're tired, and they don't always bounce back from travel the same way that other lifters do. And sometimes, I mean, it affects them
and sometimes it affects the same person differently every time.
Right. Yeah. And so, like, I had one lifter, Riley, at University Nationals, where, you know, I was pretty confident that he could hit a pretty high clean and jerk opener, but, like, the lockouts weren't happening for him. And I kind of bumped him up a kilo to try to buy him some time, and it didn't work out. And I felt so bad because he ended up bombing out that meet. And I was just like, I felt terrible. Like, I told him I would never let that happen again. Like, I'd start having him open a little bit lower, build some confidence and some momentum going into the next lift. And instead of just, like, pushing for that end potential lift,
building momentum.
Building momentum, and that was something that I had to learn the real hard way. And yeah, another thing
that was a lesson that I remember really well.
Don't let your lifters jump a kilo after they miss their opener.
Well, also, and the not going up after a miss. That lesson we've learned that the hard way a few times.
Hard way.
And also, if you have a big training PR, say you put 10 kilos on your clean and jerk in that training cycle, it's still probably not best to open with a competition PR.
Yeah.
It's maybe open with the weight you ended with and then go up to that 10 kilo improvement instead of trying to make a 15 kilo improvement on the third and go for an all-time PR.
Right.
Go for making what you did in training on your third attempt.
Right.
I think that was a memorable day. Yeah. That was one of those like gut wrenching days as a coach where you're like, we dropped the ball on that one.
Yeah, I messed up really bad, and I swore to myself I wouldn't let that happen to any of our lifters. And then another thing that it's not quite as tragic, but I've had to learn the hard way a few times. Is that when your lifters are at the beginning of the session, and so if they're opening the session, you have to be able to time when they need to pick up that barbell properly. And a lot of the time it varies by the amount of, because there's an in-between clock for when the session starts. Like, they'll make announcements, there's that in-between clock, and then when the session starts. And then you have other sessions or like that in-between time, that dead space. But you might need to be getting to a certain weight before intros even happen, because you need to be on track to take that first attempt once the clock starts. And so sometimes, like the first time that I had to do it, I botched it really bad. Like, I didn't time it properly. Like, we found out we were opening for the whole session, and we hadn't started warming up yet. So we ended up having to do a warm up to this, first attempt within that first,
5 minutes.
Five minutes of that after the intro. And, the lifter was flustered. I was flustered because I was like, oh man, I'm having to push them and then get them to take jumps that they weren't used to taking in amount of time they weren't used to taking. And so I've learned that wherever your lifters are at, you have to make sure that there's enough time taken accounted for to get them to where they need to be, no matter when they are in that session. And that was a really hard lesson to learn. And when you have newer lifters, they end up being at the beginning of the session, or if you go to AO series and you have lifters at the beginning of whatever session they're in, a B session, C session, and they're the first ones up, you have to make sure that they're warmed up according to that timeline, as opposed to how many lifts are they out. Well, they're the first one. They're zero lifts out. So you have to make sure that you kind of track it the same way as if they were a certain amount of lifts out. You break it down by time. You break it down by, how many jumps and attempts that they would be making in that time space to try to make it look like, or at least feel like, they were doing it within the middle of a session and they're ready to go.
Yeah, so another thing to anticipate when you... this was something that happened with Alan at universities, and is a good example of this, is he was the second lifter, and the person opening up before him was opening up pretty light. So they were going to have three attempts before him.
Mm-hmm.
So we knew that he essentially needed to be at what three attempts out weight would be by the time introductions clock was over. But the added complexity to that is that, so say... we got to a certain weight and we were going to do an attempt every 2 minutes. And usually if you're the second lifter, you'd be the second lift. So if you're on track and you hit your last warm-up lift 2 minutes out from the start of the session, then you have one lift and you're out. That's a perfect three attempts between, or 3 minutes ish right. between your last warm-up and your first attempt on the platform. But what you have to pay attention to and anticipate, and this happens at local meets too, if you're the second lifter, but the first lifter is a youth or a masters who's going to take three attempts before your lifter gets out there, if you have them warmed up when the session starts, they're now going to have to sit for 8 minutes as that person follows themselves twice. So you have to look, when you're paying attention at those meets and you're counting on the board or the cards, that you're anticipating, okay, well, this person is going to follow themselves twice. So where I'd normally count that as two attempts, that's actually more like 4 minutes. So you have to be able to adjust your like count accordingly to make sure that it's making sense and you don't have 8 minutes of dead time from your last warm-up to your first attempt, because then you lose your rhythm. And I think that's the most important thing with warm-ups is you want to try to be lifting at the same rhythm as you will be on the platform.
Yeah.
So you want to try to keep everything is about the same. So it's, oh, I've done a lift every 3 minutes all the way through my third attempt snatch on the platform. And that's kind of like a perfect, you know, scenario. But maintaining that rhythm with your athletes as they're warming up, making sure that they're not having to rest 10 minutes between. When we get ahead, I have people take the same weight again. Yeah. It's like, nope, we're ahead, but that's fine. Do this one more time. We're not going to go up. Do it again.
Right.
If we're too far ahead, do it again. And trying to make it so that those jumps are even, and even as far as weight distribution goes, maybe in the last couple of warm-ups, you're making the same sort of jumps you're going to be making on the platform. And then making sure that your jumps from the platform are the same that you're going to do between lifts. So, like, you don't want to take a 1 kilo jump to your first attempt on the platform, followed by a 4 kilo jump, followed by a 5 kilo jump.
Yeah.
If anything, you want to be taking a 5 kilo jump to the platform, a 3 kilo jump to the second, and a 2 to the third. Mm-hmm. Like, making those go down as the, like, difficulty goes up, or keep them similar across the board. Right. So you're doing a 5 kilo jump followed by a 5 kilo jump. There are times that you can kind of go for it, you know, if it's, we opened super light just to get the total, so now you can go up 10 kilos and really get in there. That's fine, but you just have to make sure that you're doing it intentionally and not accidentally doing that.
Yeah, I think that's definitely an important lesson too. One thing that I learned, and it doesn't really happen at local meets, it happens at national level meets, is that people like to play games. And one of the worst lessons that I learned was that people will burn your clock. If it looks like your lifter is struggling and you're pretty close in total in numbers and you're vying for spots on the leaderboard, like, they'll burn your clock. And sometimes you have to be cognizant of, like, this person is close. This other lifter is close to my lifter's total. And if they're getting close to medal contention, or they're trying to get within those top 10 positions on the ranking, like, other coaches will mess with your timing. They'll mess with your lifter. And like I said, it doesn't really happen at local meets, because, like, people are pretty straightforward about what they're trying to do there.
Yeah, and then nobody really, like, you have a winner at a local meet. Yeah. But you don't have a winner the same way you do at nationals.
No. And so, like, I've learned that the higher level meets have a little bit more, like, gaming and strategy aspect to them. But I'm not going to give you any tips or anything about those, because we're really talking about local meets. But, like, in local meets, there's no reason for you to burn another lifter's clock. Like, especially if they're just trying to, you know, get experience as, like, their first time lifting. Like, there's no reason to be doing that to other people's lifters.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, you know, it is, like you said earlier, it's a small community. Yeah. We want everybody to make their lifts. We want, you know, if there's a lot of strong people around, it's going to make everybody push harder to be stronger. Yeah. You know, like, I think that really helps with, you know, bringing new people into the sport, keeping them motivated. The clock burning, the most memorable one I have was at the last American Open with Dee in her session. One of Kevin Doherty's lifters was in that, his youth. I forget her name, but she's outstanding. And they, like, so we had just finished a second attempt, and it was her attempt, mm-hmm. and they let her clock run for about 15 seconds and then switched it.
Right.
Which brought D right up again.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah, I remember that.
But that was also just part of their timing and strategy for buying her more rest. But inadvertently, it kind of burned our clock right. And we had to go right away. But I just remember he was so polite about it afterward. He was just like, hey, man, sorry. We had to do it.
I don't know. It didn't seem that genuine to me.
But... I mean, it was like, but he was just like, I'm glad you made it afterward.
Sure.
Like, he was like, he wasn't like pissed that she still made that lift. He was just like, it's just the game, man. We just had to do it. And I was like, yeah, I get it, man. That's fine. We do a lot of EMOMs, so she's good to go.
Yeah. Well, the worst one that happened to me was at University Nationals with Robin.
And, oh, that was the year that I couldn't go.
Yeah, and she had missed her second attempt, and she was up for her third, but she was going to follow herself. Mm-hmm. But what ended up happening is like they condensed the session with different weight categories. So there was two weight categories in it. And the girl that was in a different weight category was doing the same attempt number that Robin had just missed. But what she ended up doing was jumping a kilo, burn Robin's 2-minute clock, and then Robin was on the clock for that attempt again. And
with
a 1-minute rest. Well, not even a 1-minute rest because she was already starting to have to go again.
Yeah.
So like she, yeah, that kind of was frustrating that had happened. But I learned from
keep
that.
Keep an eye out for that.
You just have to watch. Like that doesn't happen to you at a national level meet, but it's definitely a possibility.
Yeah. So for everybody getting ready for any American Open series and stuff, in the K session, you're probably not going to see it as much, but if you're getting up into some higher sessions, and also, you know, coaches need practice too. So sometimes that does happen in those lower sessions is you kind of, that's when you practice your games. That's when you practice your timing.
Yeah.
So those things do pop up and, you know, just remembering that if your clock gets burned, it's not because they hate you. It's just the game.
Well, like they're trying to win because they hate you.
Maybe a little bit, but you know, it's not assigning, you know, maliciousness to just, no, it's just, that's what the sport is. It's not, they're trying to score more than you are.
Yeah. And if it came down to it and if one of our lifters needed some more time and I had to burn somebody else's clock to do it, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And that's just part of how weightlifting is. And like, it's not even malicious. Like, it's not even about the other lifter or whatever their club is. It's like, if my lifter needs more time, I'm going to buy them more time.
On the other hand though, I've done this a couple times and I just feel like it's good karma basically.
Yeah.
But, you know, if there's a lifter where, because I'll oftentimes like make a change to what I actually want for the next attempt, but I'll put something in just to see what other people do. But if I know for a fact there's somebody who has to go again after a miss, but I'm going to bump, I'll let them know like, hey, I'm changing this and I'm going to give you 30 seconds before I do it. And like just trying to be nice to people when you can. So like, be, you know, ruthless in your approach when it means like winning.
Right.
But if it makes no difference to what your athlete does, but it kind of helps somebody else out who needs an extra 30 seconds, I always try to be nice and like, you know, it's like, hey, we're not actually doing that weight, but I'm going to give you 30 seconds of this clock before I put it in so that you get some time. Because I don't know if that's just bad strategy, but that's just for me personally. Like I like doing that. I like feeling like, you know, I always try to be like friendly to everybody we're sharing the platform with. Like, hey, what do you need next?
Yeah.
Like, cause
we'll help you load it and things like that. And
yeah,
we'll work with you a little bit. Yeah. And it's just like, if it doesn't cost us anything, like we're going to let you know what we're going to do. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause like we're going to move up. If your lifter, just so you know, we're not taking that attempt. We're going to move up. But just so you got a heads up, like that's going to happen. So,
yeah. So I think it's good to be nice to people. Cause there's not that many of us.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Why, it's growing, but
I make enemies.
Yeah. It's growing. And, I know in our community, like we're getting to see more and more weightlifters at these local meets, like 50, 55, 56 people at a meet is starting to get pretty, you know, pretty substantial. So it makes a long day, but it's cool to see that a lot of people are starting to come out and participate in these types of things. So in the next couple of weeks, we are going to be heading to Nationals. It's going to be in Memphis, Tennessee. And we're looking forward to that. We're taking three lifters with us out there.
Yep, that's a record number. Third year in a row going to Nationals.
Yeah.
First time taking more than one person. So very exciting time for us.
Yeah, that's good. We're looking forward to that. And I know we didn't get into any like lengthy philosophy stuff this time around, but...
maybe we'll make that a big focus next time.
Yeah, we'll
focus. We'll do another reading.
So if you've listened in, some coaching tips and experiences from us and what we've kind of gone through to get to where we're at, and we're just happy to see our community growing and our sport growing, and we hope that y'all have enjoyed this episode.
Yeah, keep learning, keep lifting, and we'll see you guys next time.
All right, y'all, happy lifting.